with me.
Meow.
The Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Megan and Davi? Can you feel it? Is it working?
What's a locus ceruleus? Do I have one?
Yeah, locus ceruleus is part of your brain that deals with... I don't know. It's got to do with reactions. It's got to do with the limbic system. It's got to do with freaking out. So if your locus ceruleus is
it's the center for the surreal part of your brain.
Yeah, it's basically like what most talk radio does. Is probably overstimulates your locus ceruleus, but we calm your locus ceruleus. We're different. We're not like the other shows. So I am Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. We got Davi Barker, the Shiny Badger. And we got the wolf ram, what is it?
Panther.
The wolf ram panther, Ms. MK Lords. And we are talking about stuff today. We have a topic, but I want to get this out of the way. Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. Does anyone have anything to add to that?
I don't like him. Not one bit.
No.
I think that about sums it up.
Yeah. And we feel that way about all politicians. Ron Paul was kind of fun, but he's not a politician anymore, so that's it. Can you think of any others that aren't socialists whose feet stink?
Well, they're all socialists.
One. Yeah.
All right. I mean, you know, like maybe they're not ideologically socialist, but they're all working for a socialist organization, so, you know.
Okay, let's take a minute to explain that before we go on to fun stuff that doesn't have anything to do with politics. Now, how could you say, you know, I mean, a lot of people who liked George W. Bush hate Obama because they say Obama's a socialist, but we would say George Bush is a socialist. Why do we say that?
Well, it's because the whole apparatus is socialist on its face. It's about taking from those who have, giving to those who don't. It's about, you know, sacrificing the individual for the greater good. It's about supplying for the collective at the expense of the individual. I mean, it is socialism on its face. Every government is everywhere. It's just a matter of degrees.
Yep. Megan?
Well, yeah, socialists like to talk a lot about class warfare, but if in a socialist society, you see a lot more of that from the state level. So in the case of the military, it targets a specific class of people, usually poorer people. Maybe they don't have much aspirations for college or, you know, whatever. They're just trying to get out of a bad situation or whatever. Military targets those people. So,
yeah. Do you know the term
form of internal warfare?
The poverty draft?
Yeah.
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 Can
absolutely.
You explain that?
Yeah, it's basically what I was talking about. They target certain classes of people who may not be able to afford to go to college, or they're, in poorer neighborhoods. And they go to every high school now with these recruiters. And those are the people who tend to disproportionately be joining the military.
Yeah. And there's actually a theory that there was an internal memo or a few of them during the Nixon administration that basically the idea was, get rid of the draft and most of the protesters will leave the streets and go back to smoking pot in their dorm rooms, and you won't have unrest in the streets. And instead of having a conscription draft, just ruin the economy to the point where you have enough people wanting to volunteer anyway.
Well, that's why progressives like Jon Stewart occasionally call for the draft, because they think it will reinvigorate the anti-war movement.
Is that the reason, or right. Is it because they're, twistedly patriotic to where they think?
No, it's explicitly the reason. That's what they say. Michael Moore has said that more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really despise Michael Moore for most things he does, but he's done a couple things that were kind of cute. One was standing out in front of Congress with, you know, trying to get members of Congress basically to sign their kids up for the draft, which, you can't actually do. You can't make your kid sign up for the draft by signing a piece of paper anymore. But I think one member of Congress out of all of them that he talked to, I don't know how many that was, but one of them took a pamphlet from him or something. Yeah.
He accidentally demystified firearms for me.
How?
He has a movie. I forget which one it is.
For Columbine.
Columbine.
Where he goes into a bank and he walks out with a rifle. And I found out later that that was sort of movie magic. that they didn't actually give him the rifle in the bank. They gave him a voucher, but he apparently walked into the bank with the rifle and then they kicked him out, and he got the footage of him walking out triumphantly with the rifle. But from my perspective, from a Californian at the time and being the age that I was, I thought that like holding a gun in public would lead to complete chaos in the streets. And so the fact that like here was this person who was, you know, progressive and Democrat, just like me at the time, holding a rifle without blowing his own head off, like it demystified it for
and he's
me.
Not a, and he's not a police and he's not a soldier and he's holding a gun and nothing horrible happened.
So he actually did the opposite of what he intended to do, at least for me.
Yeah. And I must say he was back when I was a socialist before I saw the light. I was kind of inspired by his documentarianism and thought it was kind of well done propaganda, and it inspired and informed some of the filmmaking I did later, including, and I never really thought about this, but I bet this is inspired in the back of my head. In my movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, my friend Mama Liberty, who's a 65-year-old grandmother who open carries a revolver in Wyoming everywhere she goes outside of the house, she goes into a bank carrying her pistol. Now, we actually did some movie magic in that because I was up where she lives in Wyoming for just one day and had to film a bunch of interviews and some external shots like that. And the bank was closed, but the first door was open and we cut when she goes to pull open the second door. But she actually does open carry into that bank every time she goes into it. That's her bank. They know her and they're fine with it.
Nice. Okay.
So it was a recreation of an actual event.
It was an artist's conception of an actual event.
Nice.
Yeah. One of the most fun parts of making that movie was actually a scripted line, but she had this neighbor that's this like grizzled cowboy looking type in a good way. I mean, he looks like the Marlboro Man's dad, and that's what he really looks like. And we had him go out. I wrote these lines for him, and I'm actually holding them up on a big board, a big whiteboard. His lines, and he still had trouble doing the lines because he'd never acted before, and we had to do a bunch of takes of it. But he's like 60 something years old, and he's out there with like a 8-pound hammer pounding a fence post in, and then he stops and he turns to the camera and says something like, "I don't care what my neighbor does on the other side of this fence as long as I don't have to pay for it." And I think that's awesome. And that kind of is in a lot of ways that attitude exists in Wyoming more than a lot of places, although there is nanny stuff going on here. But the cool thing was, like, this guy does work with his hands for a living in Wyoming at age 62 or 63. And we did like 5 or 6 takes of that. And he's actually wielding a heavy hammer. And he didn't get winded doing it like 5 or 6 times. Like, I'm 50 and I would get winded doing that. But, tough cowboy dude didn't. The funny thing is, too, it wasn't even his fence. It was a neighbor's fence who wasn't home. But, they're already pounded into like, rocky ground. So it's not going to go any further. We didn't do any damage. But, yeah, we just appropriated that scenery.
Cool.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah. So Michael Moore, socialist, communist. Millionaire who doesn't redistribute his own wealth and
a liar in his feet stink.
Yeah, his feet do stink, man.
I think it's interesting that we all come from the left. We all come from socialism. And when I was a socialist, I wrote a haiku about Michael Moore.
What is it?
And it was, Michael Moore should give his movies away for free. Capitalist pig.
Capitalist pig. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. And, I got no problem with anybody making money at what they do, but he makes it really obvious to make fun of him. And we all like real capitalism. We just don't like corporatism or fascism, which fascism is what exists when you have a government picking winners and losers. And as we said recently, America is a soft form of fascism and getting harder all the time.
I'm not a socialist, but I still think that there is an injunction on socialists to give their things away for free. And that's because sort of the first sort of rule of at least like aesthetic moral violations is hypocrisy. If you're espousing something and not doing it, then I think that's wrong, even if I don't think doing it and not espousing it is wrong.
Well, you talked recently about somebody doing a Google Images search for anarchist flag and meaning to get the anarcho-capitalist flag, but instead getting the anarcho-communist flag.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that happened because the anarcho-communists are so pushy about their form of anarchism being the only true anarchism.
Well, yeah, they have an intellectual property right.
Which is funny. It's funny because they don't believe in property, but they believe in they apparently believe in intellectual property on the term anarchism.
I've seen it on both sides, honestly. I've seen ANCAPs make the same claim that the one true anarchy is anarcho-capitalism. So there's a lot of going back and forth between the two.
I could see you could make the argument for it. And I like capitalism better than communism by far. But, their argument is they had it first. And
right.
But they didn't. They think that they did. But the earliest explicit anarchist
Greek term.
So the Greek term. But I mean like people actually advocating it and like moving toward it and pursuing it and supporting it. The earliest example I've found is Baghdad in like the 9th century. So there were philosophers and intellectuals at the time who were like, hey, you know, this whole centrally planned caliphate thing is kind of tyrannical. What if we just didn't have any leaders?
Yeah.
And that was in the 9th century. So I think the Iraqis, although they're probably not the same culture as they were back then.
Yeah.
But they definitely had it first.
Yeah. And that
or at least before Proudhon.
Well, and that culture right. and that culture was kind of the beginning, really, of organized state, you know, of agriculture, and because it was really hard to tax hunters and gatherers, but as soon as they were grain and people staying in one place and grain stores, there was something to tax. And there was the argument of we have to protect you from outsiders, whereas nomads just kind of were on their own.
Yeah, it's like the moment that humans began farming, they found themselves farmed.
Is that the title of the episode? It might be.
Maybe.
I like it. Yeah. Yep. So bring us home. Bring us home on this whole concept, y'all.
I think that is home for me. It's because when you're nomadic, you wander around. It's too difficult for the tax collector to find you. But the moment you stake claim and build fences and have resources that are all out in the open, God comes along. He says, hey, how about giving me some of those crops you got sitting there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I built a road to your farm.
You're going to take it.
I want your corn.
And then they're like, you and what army? Right. And he goes back and gets an army.
And unfortunately.
Yeah. And, you know, more and more, you can't be nomadic. Like, people are just controlled and cataloged and borders. And, it's pretty hard to be nomadic. But you can be nomadic in the mind and on the internet, for sure, if you know what you're doing.
Yep.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the statists win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience a drop in blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Yeah. We got a barn. Let's put on a punk show. You ever heard that expression? We got a barn. Let's put on a show.
I have not.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know where it's from, Megan?
No idea.
It was from early Hollywood. It was basically like before Hollywood was a big industry, but there were some people making films out there. And it was a phrase like, we got a barn, let's put on a show, kind of a guerrilla film aspect in early Hollywood. And
that was a line in Wayne's World, wasn't it? When they got their weird green screen.
It would make sense. I think there's a lot of inside jokes about Hollywood in Wayne's World.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to talk about unconventional ideas about conventions and events. And Davi and Megan go to a good number of Liberty events. I have only ever been to one, which was Pork Fest, and my wife and I plan to go again and again and again. I say I don't leave my man cave except for once a year, and when I do, if I go to Pork Fest and if we see my shadow, we have 15 more years of tyranny. So hopefully I will not see my shadow at some point. So
shouldn't it be one more year of tyranny? Otherwise, like the day you don't see your shadow, you're still counting down like 12 years.
There you go. I was saying 3 or 5 more years, but yeah. I've been to a bunch of events and conventions in my day, though. We got a barn. Let's put on a punk show. So we want to talk about comparisons of events and the idea of the value and drawbacks of people who do a lot of chatting and talking on the internet, actually leaving their man caves and woman caves once in a while to go meet in meet space face to face. So who wants to start?
I mean, I guess I could start. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right. So yeah, the conference thing is a little bit newer to me than the festival thing. I used to go to a lot of festivals, and I think conferences can learn a lot from how some of those are organized. There's kind of a more focus on entertainment and stuff. But what I like about the libertarian conferences is you do learn a lot if you get to go to some of the talks. But a problem I've seen being on both sides of this is the people who are speakers there. Sometimes it's a problem with them being paid because these events don't draw the largest crowds and there's not a whole lot of sponsorship sometimes. So it's a little bit hard to get people paid. And as a speaker who's gone to them and, you know, kind of paid out of my own pocket to go, it can be, you know, it can be a little expensive sometimes. But I've also organized things. So you kind of have that problem, too. You want to make something that, you know, has really quality speakers and can really connect with people. But a lot of times it's hard to get sponsorships. And I think libertarian conferences have a hard time scaling.
Well, yeah. Parkfest has scaled pretty well, it seems like. I mean, it started out. What was the earliest one either of you went to?
Maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was
my first year was the year that you and I met, Megan. I don't know when that was.
Yeah, so it would have been last year was my first time. So, yeah, 2013.
That can't be right. Last year was my second time.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Regardless, you guys can fight in the alley afterwards about this. But, you know, a few years ago, how much? I mean, this year, the estimates were between 1,000 and 2,000 people. And I'm pretty good at judging crowds. I am positive there were over 1,000 people there, well over 1,000 people. It's kind of hard to tell, though, because, first of all, a lot of it's in the woods. You know, a lot of it isn't what's going on down in the tents in the field. So it's hard to gauge people in their campgrounds when they're not all in one lump. And they do take a group picture at the end, but like I wasn't there for the group picture. We were on a plane home, and a lot of people come just for Friday or Saturday, or, you know, Saturday and Sunday. So,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to gauge, and most people pay, but some people don't. And who knows, man, but there were a lot of people there, and I know that they didn't have that many people when they first started.
Right. Well, they do a good job of kind of bringing in that more festival feel. It's not so much of a conference where you feel you have to dress up and you're kind of pressed for time to go to all of these events in 2 or 3 days.
I don't like conferences. They do an excellent job.
Yeah, like a festival.
I like Porkfest better.
It's like free range and decentralized and participatory and all this jazz. I'm like really tired of the like rows of chairs, audience watching speaker at a podium.
Yeah.
Like it feels like that's like an artifact of either public school or political debates.
It is. And also you can pretty much do that on the internet, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you're just staring at a speaker and not looking at the person on either side of you for the most part, and you're not allowed to talk, or, you know, you're shushed if you do, or you might get to raise your hand and ask a question. I mean, you can literally do all that on the internet, but, you know, dancing naked in the mud around the fire in the middle of the night in New Hampshire, you can't really do that on the internet. You know, Burning Man started with like 15 people on the beach in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And now that's, I think that's something like the 3rd or 4th biggest city in Nevada when they have it.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
temporary city.
Non-Black Rock.
Yep. All right. Freedom Fiends. Gonna go sell some stuff. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, A longer leash, if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Good afternoon, Slidell. Good afternoon, New Orleans. We are the Freedom Fiends. Talk radio musical extravaganza. I'm your host, Michael Dean. I'm talking to Davi Barker, and I am talking to MK Lords, both from Bitcoin Not Bombs. And Davi Barker's from shinybadges.com. And what else is MK from besides Bitcoin Not Bombs?
I do crypto combos. Basically an interview show about cryptography and Bitcoin and stuff like that.
Excellent. Excellent. And you and I had a good discussion about that the other night on the Freedom Fiends. If people want to go back and check that out. So we're talking about conferences and events and soirees and places.
Yeah, there's like a spectrum of hierarchy in these things. There's like festivals at the bottom. Then there's like conferences in the middle. And then there's like conventions at the other end, right?
And then there's unconferences, which is a new thing, sometimes on the internet, sometimes in person. An unconference, I would say that Porkfest had some unconference aspects this year. Generally with Porkfest, it was invited speakers. And this year, I think they were smart to do this. They didn't go with the Liberty rock stars. They didn't go with the big names so much. They had basically, if you have a talent and want to give a class, we won't pay you, but you can do it. And I think that's a pretty smart thing to do. And it ended up with everything from, you know, beekeeping to make your own AR-15 to, you know, how to make vapes for vape and nicotine.
Right.
I really liked it. Yeah, it was a really good way to highlight people's skills and talents and give them a platform for that.
Did you guys do one? I don't even know. And I was hanging out with Davi the whole time. I don't know what you guys did because I didn't go to the tents. I did one with Ben Stone. Ben Stone was scheduled, but then he asked me to help with it. It was about the hero's journey. It was about three-part storytelling.
And you did your DIY or die. I at least helped.
You were performance art in that.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. I showed my movie DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, which you can go watch on YouTube for free, or you can buy the DVD on Amazon. It's a documentary I made in 2002. Actually, there's a tiny bit of a not a socialist bent in that, but kind of a all corporations are bad kind of bent in how that was done and edited and the people I interviewed. But I was kind of moving away from that already without even really knowing that I was a libertarian yet. But it's a 55-minute documentary of interviews with people that are independent artists. And I showed it in a big hall there that probably held, 200 people, 300 people. And there were probably 28 or 32 people there, counting Davi and I. And we showed it, and Davi had just got off a plane and was really, 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 really tired. And
I was pushing my 48th hour.
Yeah, and this is how committed Davi is to DIY art. Like, basically, Davi sells things over the internet that he makes and designs, t-shirts, and you can go to shinybadges.com and see them all. But he's so used to, having, 1,000 buttons and then putting them into bags of 5 buttons each of 5 different buttons. And that's what he does with his life. A lot of it that doing that when he was really tired didn't feel like work. It actually helped calm his brain and not feel tired. So I had all these.
Yeah, get me focused.
Yeah. I had all these buttons, Freedom Fiends buttons that I'd had shipped to a friend near there. So I wouldn't have to lug them on the plane, and he'd brought them, but they weren't in bags yet. So I brought bags. And I started to do it, and Davi's like, I'll help you with that. And Davi sat on the stage while we showed the movie. Like, he was kind of in the shadows, using the light from the movie screen to do all this, putting together merchandise. And but it was kind of like proof of concept of the movie going on live during the movie.
It was fun. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Did you do a talk there? MK?
I was supposed to do the lockpicking workshop, but it was full and I didn't get a chance to. I was on a couple panels. I did the Women in Bitcoin panel, and then I also did the Bitcoin in Media panel. So
how do you feel
those are both fun.
How do you feel about doing women in whatever panels?
You know, I'm really generally not for it because I don't really like my gender being focused on as an accomplishment or any kind of feature that should be.
I know it's kind of like Special Olympics or something, you know, like.
Well, but what was great about that panel is Stephanie Murphy moderated and she focused on all of our work and our accomplishments in the space and things like that. It wasn't really about like, these are the women in Bitcoin. There was like one question, what can we do to get more women in Bitcoin? But it was more of a focus on our each individual on the panel. So the way she moderated it was really cool. But otherwise, I'm generally opposed to doing women in Bitcoin panels.
Yeah, and Stephanie Murphy.
It's pointless. I'd rather have five separate women speakers at a conference.
Yeah, Stephanie Murphy has said she feels exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. Yeah,
that I think was the best argument. Like, I used to be kind of on the fence about it because like there's nothing like wrong with it per se, but at the same time, like, I don't really like the idea of like collectivizing people together on account of something that has nothing really to do with their work. But yeah, you said this at Libertopia last week, and you said that the downside of having a panel of all the women is that then all of those women don't get an entire hour of their own to present their work. Yeah.
Right.
And that was a huge value add to Coins in the Kingdom when you had like Pamela Morgan doing her own thing on the law and you had Stephanie Murphy doing her own thing on agorism and you split them all up. Yeah. And it's like suddenly you can actually delve into all this cool stuff that they're doing and you don't have them sort of on stage fighting with each other for time.
It's kind of insulting. Yeah. It's kind of like, well, okay, you can go see these five different males do these five different things, and then we'll just put all the women together, and they can all get a fifth of the time or something.
Right. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, why aren't there more female speakers at conferences? And so
Maybe you put them all on a panel and don't give them their own time.
I like how Davi is interrupting the woman who's trying to talk about why women don't get enough
time.
Yeah.
I'm so oppressed right now, you
Sorry.
Guys.
Sorry.
I'm oppressed.
No, but seriously, that's what I did. Someone actually, another woman crunched the numbers on Bitcoin in the Beltway and said we had 40% more female speakers than any other Bitcoin conference to date. And then Coins in the Kingdom, I tried to do the same thing. These were women. I was looking for individuals who were accomplishing a lot, and a lot of them happened to be women, and they all got their own time to present their ideas and what they'd been working on. And, you know, as far as I know, they all really enjoyed that and, you know, felt like they were able to, you know, contribute more to the conversation. So
I know how to get more women into Bitcoin. Tell them that you can go to gift.com, GYFT.com, and spend Bitcoin to get gift certificates for Sephora. Seriously,
what's Sephora?
Man, Sephora is
it's true.
What is Sephora? Tell us what Sephora is, woman.
I mean, well, dude, like, I really don't know. I don't, I'm not, is
You're
it
not
like
makeup.
A makeup
it's, yeah, you don't,
I'm
you don't.
Really not into like a lot of that stuff. Like, I hoard my Bitcoins, honestly.
Yeah, it's not just makeup, though. It's shampoo and conditioner and face cream and all sorts of fun, like high end ladies' products. But I actually use a lot of the stuff there. I mean, they have like shaving cream for men and it's really nice. But literally, like, my wife kind of thought of my Bitcoin hobby as like, oh, that's that magical internet money that can't be used for anything. And he's trading it with his friends like Pogs until I said, you know, you could spend this on Sephora. And all of a sudden, I mean, it's not like she took all my Bitcoin. I gladly shared. We share everything. But all of a sudden, you know, like I had like $1,200 in Bitcoin at one point. And literally, like, you know, all our bills were paid at that moment and there was nothing I needed. And I was like, you know, she came home from work one day and I was like, I have a $500 Sephora gift certificate for you that you can sit down and spend right now. And she looked like it was a little kid on Christmas, man.
Yeah.
Well, Go ahead, MK. I was about to say, I'm probably like an outlier among women. I just started getting into more ladylike stuff not too long ago. So I think for most women, that is a draw. So.
Yep. And that's gift.com, who are not a sponsor of ours, but it's gyft.com. I like to tell people anything that can encourage spending Bitcoin and actually using it as currency. And it's not just Sephora. I mean, you can get gift cards there that you can use online or in stores. You can get iTunes cards, Amazon cards, Best Buy, Starbucks, Target, Sephora, Home Depot, Whole Foods, and like a couple hundred other places. So, and Amazon, you can pretty much buy anything under the sun except for Guns and Weed, but you can buy the DVD gunsandweed.com at Amazon.
So the thing that convinced my wife that, that Bitcoin wasn't internet money was I sent her flowers at work, and the card inside the flowers said, the gift that Bitcoin bought.
That's cool.
Where do you go to do that?
I don't remember. I think it was one of these gift card sites, and then I ordered it from one of the online flower things. Yeah. I don't even remember. This was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and if anybody is just joining us from hanging out with J.D. Salinger and Osama bin Laden in a cave, let's explain what Bitcoin is. Who wants to explain Bitcoin for the technologically challenged?
Now I'll take a crack at it. It's a peer-to-peer digital currency which allows people to transfer money or transfer – I mean not like transfer dollars, but transfer Bitcoin as a commodity, as a currency anywhere in the world – as quick as a text message with no intermediary bank or government forms or anything like that. And because it is a decentralized ledger, it essentially cannot be shut down the same way that like a torrent can't be shut down. And so
or the same way that a bank could be shut down or a credit card account right. could be seized by the government.
There's no central headquarters to raid. There's no company to comply. And there's no address to send a threatening letter to.
I came up with a description that works with my 93-year-old dad who grew up in the Great Depression and can send an email but can't do much else on a computer and often writes emails and then loses them before he sends them as drafts. He loses the drafts and calls me and asks, I wrote you a letter. How do I find it? I explain it to him, and this is one I encourage people to use, even though it's not nearly entirely accurate. If someone's completely technologically challenged, I explain it as gold that you can email.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes it a little easier to understand.
Yeah, or it's like gold that you can email, you know, not, and explaining that it's not, there's no gold involved. Although Davi and I did prove that Bitcoin is in fact backed by gold because Bitcoin is backed by computing power, and you can't make a microprocessor or a computer without a tiny bit of gold.
Right. So every process in the Bitcoin network de facto is proof of some sort of gold holdings somewhere.
Yeah. It's probably also backed by like beryllium and copper and silicon too.
Yeah. Electricity and plastic. And
electricity and what?
Plastic.
And magic.
And magic.
And magic. It is magic internet money.
It is magic internet money in the sense, in the Heinlein sense that, or maybe it wasn't Heinlein, it was some sci-fi writer who said that advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And that's kind of true, you know, when you think about, you think about cell phones. I mean, cell phones are the Star Trek communicator, you know, and in the 60s, the idea of a handheld device that anybody could own, that anybody could call anybody in the world with, was sci-fi. And, you know, the first cell phones kind of looked like Star Trek communicators. Or the second generation, the flip-top ones.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go sell some stuff that maybe you can buy with Bitcoin. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshives.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. Trueshives.com.
Freedom Fiends. It was Arthur C. Clarke who said, any sufficient advanced act of benevolence, oh no, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from a rigged demo. And that was taken to
weird.
Change to magic. Yeah.
A rigged demo. Mm-hmm. Magic. Yep. I get it. Yeah. It was Davi Barker that said any sufficiently advanced social order appears like anarchy to the statist.
Explain. I think we should talk a little bit about how anarchy exists as a good thing in daily life. Whenever we're having a picnic with our family, our friends, that's anarchy. There's no central organizing, force there. Now, how does that extend to conferences and events?
Well, they are little pockets of anarchy. Well, what I meant by that statement was that all of the sort of advances in human liberty we've seen in the history of the world were decried as anarchy when they happened. Like the British Crown said that democracy was anarchy. The Catholic Church said that the Protestant Reformation was anarchy. And from their perspective, believing that order comes from their central hierarchies, the decentralization of that hierarchy does appear like anarchy. And so when we're talking about anarchy, we're not necessarily talking about like utter chaos and like melting clocks in the streets. We're talking about a social order that is radically decentralized compared to what we have now and appears like anarchy to those who can't fathom one without a central plan. But it would be harmonious and it would be peaceful and it would be progress the same way that, you know, religious reformations and political revolutions have been throughout history. So that's what I mean by that. But when we talk about festivals, I like to call them, or at least there's a book out there called The Temporary Autonomous Zone by Hakim Bey. And it's sort of about how anarchy is around you all of the time, because there is no gun in the room when you and your friends are sitting around a campfire or sitting in your living room eating a turkey dinner or whatever.
Explain the gun in the room for people who don't know that phrase.
Well, there's nobody enforcing the rules when you're sitting around engaging in a sort of social environment, right? So like at Porkfest, the police are not on site. There's nobody has in their mind, if I defraud this person, the police will come after me and I'll be sued and I'll be thrown in a courtroom and whatever. In their mind, they're dealing with the people right in front of them, which means that it's essentially an anarchy. It's an autonomous zone which exists temporarily in time and space. And the goal is to expand those autonomous zones so they encompass more time and space and eventually eclipse the coercive zones. So it's not like it all happens all at once. It's that it sort of gradually spreads like a fungus across the countryside.
Now, what would you say to somebody, a statist, who wanted to argue against that and say, well, yeah, when I'm in the park with my family and friends having a picnic, it is a little zone of anarchy, but that zone only exists because the government is out there with rough men with guns patrolling the night and the day to make sure people don't come into that park and bother us.
Well, the opposite is also true. Those rough men with guns only exist because some temporary autonomous zone somewhere resulted in the tax revenue that keeps them fed. So right now we have a parasitic, almost symbiotic relationship between these two modes of survival, these two reproductive strategies. And so the question is, if it's not actually symbiotic, if one of them can survive without the other, then the other one must be a parasite. So the question is the coercive mode the parasite on the voluntary mode, or is the voluntary mode the parasite on the coercive mode? And I would argue, I think we'd all agree, that the voluntary one can subsist independently, but the coercive one can't.
Deep.
Mm-hmm.
Megan?
Yeah, basically the best festivals and conferences I've gone to have been ones without police. Basically, you don't have that kind of violence, because I think in a lot of ways they bring the energy of violence with them. And it's very hard to feel safe. There's a lot of tension. And people forget that criminals, violent criminals, make up an extremely small percentage of the overall population. And violent crime from kind of petty criminals, lower level criminals, not government criminals, but lower level criminals, has been decreasing for the past 100 years. Pretty drastic.
Porkfest is
really good. Due to government.
Porkfest was, between 1,000 and 2,000 armed people. Some people armed, a lot of people armed, a lot of people openly armed. Some people smoking dope. People running around. No real laws. Some rules, but yeah, man, there was not a single violent event there, and that's a good thing. And we'll be back for hour two of Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market and some national news, which will probably scare the heck out of you. And then we'll make you feel good. We'll make you feel good when you come back.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Have you been contacted by the government, Davi and Megan?
I have not been contacted by the government.
That's a good day. It's a good day when you're not contacted by the government. So we're going to continue with our discussion about events and conventions and unconventional conventions. I got a couple of I was wrong from last week with last time Davi was on. I said when I was talking about people who want to who think that they don't have to answer legal filings because their name is in all caps and they say, that's how it is on a tombstone. That's a dead person. That's not me. I said, the plaintiff, in every legal filing ever, the plaintiff's name is in all caps. What I meant to say was the plaintiff and defendant's names are in all caps. I said about Bitcoin being backed by gold because you use gold to make computers. I said, we need to get that out of there. I meant we need to get that out there. Like, we need to spread that phrase. I said, when I was talking about Star Trek, I said, yeah, man. And Roddenberry created an industry where like people point guns at each other all the time, even though it's centrally planned. I meant to say he created a universe where people point ray guns at each other all day, not an industry. Let's see. I added two reasons why I like to do radio to my growing list of why we're not just a podcast. I like the breaks because I get to go, you know, grab a snack, pet the cat, say hi to the wife, and, you know, visit the bathroom if I need to. So I actually dig doing the break, having the breaks live, unless I'm really, really ranting. And then I'm like, when's this break over? I've got more things to say, like today. But yeah. And we put up archives of this that we record on our end that have far less breaks than live. Like, you know, a 2-hour show on radio, when we put it up, even if we put a 30 or 60 second ad in each break instead of a 4 or 5 minute break, I mean, our shows are like an hour, 18 minutes long instead of 2 hours. So we take a lot of the breaks out when we put it up on the podcast, but I like the breaks. The other thing is I really like the gear and the challenge of doing radio. And I'm kind of a gear, word you can't say on radio. I love gear. I've always loved electronics since I was a kid. I used to build electronics, and now I can afford to buy some okay electronics. And that's one of the Freedom Fiends doesn't make. One of the reasons we don't make much money is because the little money I make, I put into like buying buttons and give them away at Liberty events and things like that, and travel to Liberty events, and then buy gear. And then buy gear for co-hosts. Like, you know, I buy microphones for co-hosts sometimes. I've bought, I buy a new, better compressor and I give the old one to one of the co-hosts, things like that. So I love the gear, man. It's all fun. And then the other correction I had was we talked about how this is back when we still talked about libertarians by name that we don't like, and we don't do that anymore. But I have a correction. Davi and I came up with a corollary to Goodwin's Law. That's the law that on the internet, as soon as you call the other guy Hitler or compare him to Hitler or Nazis, you've lost the argument. And we came up with a corollary of as soon as you call someone a government agent or imply they might be one, you've lost the argument. I didn't say this in the show. I didn't realize it till later, the contradiction of the fact that Davi and I have lost the argument with Chris Cantwell, because we did a whole episode once called Is Chris Cantwell a Cop?
Yeah.
Which was largely just based on a meme that I had him do of, I said, put Chris Cantwell's head on Chief Wiggum.
From
The Simpsons, yeah. And it was pretty funny. And like even people who like Cantwell thought that was pretty funny. But it inspired this whole episode, and it was kind of like that guy has called people a government plant. He did an article about what's his name's house getting raided by the police. Who's that guy? Liberty guy? Adam Kokesh. Yeah, like after that happened, and when there were like people still living in his house, and apparently like somebody stole something. I don't know, but Cantwell was living there and watching it all fall apart. I'm not saying he stole anything, but other people may have stolen things. But he was accusing a woman by name in a blog post, accusing a woman who was staying there by name of being possibly a government agent. And his evidence was that she was like 45 and well-dressed and an attorney, and she was dating some punk rock scumbag 21-year-old who lived there. And he thought there was no reason a distinguished older woman would be dating a young scumbag rocker. But having been scumbag rocker in my past, yeah, man, the Cougars run deep. I will say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not evidence, man.
It's a meow, right? It's men meow. Enjoying older women.
Yeah, it's you know what it is? He was just mixing up his acronyms, because it was just meow, men enjoying older women, but Cantwell thought it was meow, the moral equivalent of war.
Ah.
Yeah. All right, so I think we're all caught up in the I was wrong fight. And, you know, also it was just like, it was kind of fun to call Cantwell a cop, because he calls everybody every name under the sun and just like lives to make people seethe. But he doesn't take it very well, man.
He wouldn't shake my hand after Porkfest Idol last year. Yeah.
Why not?
I went to introduce myself. Well, we did Porkfest Idol. And
because you won it out from under him.
Yeah, I won. He totally expected to win. I went to shake his hand. He tried to do the whole like pretending he didn't see me and like turn around and kind of walked away.
Sore loser.
You know, he did respond to my tweet about the Ally McBeal baby, though. So I put out a tweet and I said, look, I'm soliciting bids. If you're an animator, I want Chris Cantwell's head on the dancing baby from Ally McBeal. And he responded that he would go in on, he would split the bill with us if we would let them put my head and your head, Michael, on the dancing baby as well. And I said, I was all for that. I'm willing to be the Ally McBeal baby if he is too.
Oh, so we would have one that's just him, but then he'd have one that's like you and I as a two-headed baby, dancing baby.
Well, I think he imagined that it would be separate babies, but I would be fine with that too.
I want to be a two-headed baby.
I would share a baby's body with you, Michael. That sounds like
now if that was taken out of context,
it's just a dance party.
That could be like a really creepy cannibalism reference. I would share a baby's body with you, Michael, or something equally bad. So, moving right along. Yeah, you know, actually, I met Larkin Rose at Porkfest. And he kind of dissed me too. I went up to him and went to shake his hand. I was like, hey, it's good to finally meet you. This is before I'd done more research into him. And I went to shake his hand. I said, hey, I'm Michael Dean. And he looked away at a 45 degree angle, and there was nobody standing there. It was just the two of us. And he said, yeah, I know who you are, and didn't put his hand out.
Wow.
Ow. Yeah.
Lots of cat fights in the Liberty Movement.
Yeah, but I'm stepping out of him, man. My cat died. I'm not in the fight anymore. All right. So we were going to talk more about conferences, but I guess we're halfway through this particular segment. But we did mention conferences. We mentioned Porkfest. And, you know, we were talking about the difference between like events and conferences. You know, events can have conferences at them. Conferences are where you go into a hotel usually and rent some rooms at a hotel conference room, and people go in and appointed rock stars in whatever your niche belief is that is drawing everyone to the conference. You know, the kind of movers and shakers of that are on a panel or given, you know, usually a panel, but sometimes single person giving a speech or a talk. And then there's a Q&A afterwards, and then it's over. And like, it's a very one-sided kind of centralized, you know, this is the authority and you are the peons and you will listen to us now.
Yeah, it's like separating the celebritarians from the plebs.
Yeah, it is. And right. I've actually been to an event like that and been a panel speaker on it. And I still just thought the whole thing was silly and made fun of it. And people thought I was dissing the movement. See, I don't really think it was the podcasting expo. I went to the podcasting expo with my wife in Ontario, California, when we lived in LA. You know, as a hour
California
and a half.
Has an Ontario. Maybe, yeah. I don't have to go to Canada.
It's in Southern California, man. It's like a suburb of LA, like 90-minute drive later, which means 22 miles in LA. But
okay,
no, it's further than that. But we went to it, and we actually spent our first wedding anniversary at this. And that's one of the things I love about my wife. Like, she's not like, oh, you need to take me to Hawaii for our anniversary. It's more like, you know, we were both doing a podcast at the time. I'm like, hey, this looks fun. Let's do this. So we spent the weekend. We booked two nights at the hotel, and we went to the podcasting expo. Now, the interesting thing was, I went to that podcast awards there, and I went to them, and Free Talk Live won the award for best political podcast that year. They weren't there to pick it up, and I'd never heard of them before. And that was like my introduction to the concept of there's something called Free Talk Live. And I started listening to them immediately. And, you know, that and a few other things made me a libertarian shortly after. Basically, someone trying to break into our house while we're home and us buying guns and then realizing we couldn't take them out of the house. That and Boston's book, You and the Police, Boston Tea Party's book, You and the Police, which you just got, Davi, from Boston, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Got it signed and everything. You put my name on it. I feel very, very accomplished.
Did you tell him you were a fiend?
I did, yeah. Well, he knew. I guess you had talked to him, and so he knew who I was when I walked up.
Yeah,
he found me too, and I had a good conversation. What I liked about Libertopia, as you mentioned earlier about the audience and participants disparity, is it actually did kind of feel more equal because the audience would sometimes jump into talks while you were doing the panel. And like, yeah. I kind of like that. Like, it kind of keeps you on your toes, and it felt more kind of more equal. You know, they could just give feedback as the panel was going on instead of waiting until the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of talking about fan conventions. When you go to fan conventions, there's like a concerted effort to have like security and carpet, like there's drapery separating you from the celebrities. And you wait in these like long lines to go up to the celebrities and like, you know, get them to sign some glossy photograph or something like that.
But they're also like real celebrities, right? Like they're people in Hollywood who, you know, make six figures or seven figures working their job, right?
Yeah, so what? You know, like
I see the point, but
Patrick Byrne is a real, you know, however many figures he earns working for Overstock.com. But we still walked up to him and shook his hand at the Freedom Summit. So,
well, the thing
he hung out with us for a while.
The thing with Hollywood that's different, though, is that, you know, someone that works on what's the zombie movie you like?
Walking Dead is the TV show.
You know, like a star of that movie. I mean, you know, we think in our little Liberty Pond, like, oh, Stefan Molyneux, he's a star and I don't like him. But like Stefan Molyneux, his fan base or the people who even have heard of him is so dwarfed by someone who's on network or major cable TV, you know?
Oh, yeah,
and,
for sure.
And the amount of loons that walk up to somebody who's on TV, I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable, you know?
That's fair. There's also a scarcity because they're only there for however many hours the conference is going, and there are hundreds, maybe thousands of people waiting in line to see them. And there's also a security issue. Like, you never know who's going to like walk up and like try and assassinate them because of what their character did or some crazy thing like that.
Yeah, I actually one time was back when I did drugs. I was going with Perry Farrell because he wanted to buy some drugs, and I knew someone that knew drugs. And I was in a rider van, like one of those big, like you're up above the street vans. And the guy from the Flaming Lips was driving, Steve, and Perry is in the middle, and I was on the right. And people kept waving to him, and we're like up in the air, and people were recognizing him, and it was all girls. And I was like, "Do you know her? Do you know her? Do you know her?" And he said, "Nah, man, chicks just dig me."
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Hey, there's some Squisscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So we're talking about conventions, unconventional conventions. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of good to go to a place where a bunch of people all have the same shared interest. But there's also something weird about people who live in a kind of an all shared interest world, you know, whether it's Star Trek, Star Wars, zombies, or, you know, kinky sex, or computers, or Bitcoin, or any number, or podcasting, or anything else there would be conventions for, and that there are specific, you know, like forums for. The thing is, too, like before the internet, conventions were a kind of a bigger thing because that was the only way you did all the networking, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Although there is a sense in which everywhere you go is kind of a place where people of similar interests have all sort of congregated for one reason or another. I mean, even like Earth, yeah. We're all, you know, carbon-based life forms that like oxygen. That's why we're all here. So
yeah, I think the kind of exception of that might be the coffee shop. I mean, I guess it's people who like coffee, but actually people go to coffee shops who don't drink coffee. You know, they just want...
Oh, you know, yeah, absolutely. Coffee shops are quickly learning that lots of people don't like coffee, and they're working very hard to obfuscate the fact that their product is coffee.
Yeah.
So, you know, they add sugar, they add cream, they add milk, they add pumpkin.
Yeah.
Whatever they can do to keep it from being coffee, to keep people coming and sitting in the seats.
You know, I've always thought of, like, a coffee shop as kind of a great leveler. Like, throughout history, I mean, going back to, like... Didn't some country ban coffee and then something about prayers? What was that? Islamic?
Turkey. Yeah. Yeah. That's like in the Middle Ages. So
well, coffee, that was like the early days of coffee being traded though, too, wasn't it?
Yeah. So coffee was discovered in Yemen, and it was discovered
existed way before that.
You know? Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Tea goes all the way back. It was discovered when the
first Silk Road.
A goat herder discovered that his goats were going up and eating the berries off of this little plant.
And getting happy and dancing.
And getting really, really energetic about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so he tried it himself and had the effect happen to him and shared it with his neighbors. And the word coffee even comes from Arabic, the words kahwa. But the sort of religious authorities of the time said, nope, this is a drug. You can't do this.
This is fun.
If it's fun, then you know we have a law for that. And so you know,
I was looking at English.com.
Is reasonable suspicion for a search.
There's actually a sign on the Great Wall of China that's in Chinese and in English, and the English translation is fun is forbidden. and one of the comments on it was, communist playgrounds suck.
But it is an example too of sort of massive civil disobedience ending up repealing this medieval law because people just refused to abide by it. And the thing that actually that ended up getting it taken off the books in the Ottoman Empire was that somebody said, hey, you know, if you can stay up longer, then you can pray longer. And then suddenly they had their it was a gateway argument. It's the same as saying marijuana is a medicine when really we think it should all be completely decriminalized regardless of whether or not it's a medicine. Like it was mm-hmm. there was massive civil disobedience in this period regarding coffee at the time.
There was also some king, I don't know if it was in England or France or somewhere in the 1600s, there about 1700s, there was some king who banned coffee shops because he said that people drank coffee and planned revolution.
Yeah.
Not just that it was a meeting place, but the meeting place in combination with the stimulating effects of coffee made people want to discuss the idea of revolution.
People hanging around talking is very dangerous.
Well, I used to say I was a minarchist in the morning before my coffee and an anarchist after my coffee. But now I'm pretty much just straight up a no government man all the time. Although I'm not someone who believes that I can use magic words in court and the government will disappear like, you know, the man behind the curtain. I know it's real. It's kind of like the analogy I use is I took sex ed from a priest in my boarding school.
And, I'm sorry
and,
to hear that.
And he passed a hat around and said you could ask questions. And one of the questions was somebody said, do you believe in premarital sex? And he read it out loud and said, I believe it exists.
It does occur.
So I don't believe in the government, but I believe it exists. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
But I believe I should be able to keep all my stuff, too. And I think you guys agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The anarcho-communists always, they can never really explain to me how they plan to redistribute my wealth without pointing a gun at my head. And acting like a government.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of times they're anti-gun, too. So in this hypothetical situation, it wouldn't be the ANCOMs who would end up having the property. It would be the ANCAPs with the guns.
Oh, communists have no problem with guns for communism. One of my favorite rifles I own is a communist rifle from World War II. It's a Mosin-Nagant Russian rifle that still shoots straight and true out to 700 or 800 yards. We'll be back. With the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
So we're talking before the break, we're talking about conferences, but, you know, I did say that communists have no problem with guns when they're used to back communism. And actually, the statement, power comes at the barrel of a gun, was written by that great tyrant, horrible person who killed more people than Hitler, Chairman Mao.
Miao Zedong.
Yeah, Miao Zedong. He said, power comes from the barrel of a gun, and it was in a treatise that was about how to seize communist power and redistribute wealth.
Yeah, in his mind, it was in praise of power.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it certainly was not in praise of private ownership of guns. It was in favor of a huge, possibly not voluntary military enforcing the will of the state and the writings of Marx and Lenin. And the AK-47 was the successor. Well, there was the Mosin-Nagant, which fought World War II. There was the, which killed, you know, I like the gun. They say guns don't kill people, people do, but I agree with that, but I kind of like the idea that this actual rifle I owned actually killed Nazis. I think that's kind of cool. And, you know, you can buy these things for like $150.
It's like a legendary sword or something. Man.
Yeah.
So that machine literally killed fascists.
Yes. Yes. I could write that on the side of it instead of on my banjo. This machine surrounds hate and forces fascists to surrender or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. And then there was the, SKS was the intermediary follow-up to that. And that quickly morphed into the AK-47, which kind of has become the symbol of communism throughout the world. I mean, it's actually on some money somewhere. It's on a flag somewhere. You know, it is the, and there are more AK-47s in the world than there are any other firearm. You know, it's somewhere approaching a billion, somewhere between a half billion and a billion with a B of these things around. And, you know, every communist country made them, and Russia made them in mass. You know, we talked about how fascism is where you get to own your own factory. But when the government says you're not going to make automobiles anymore, you're going to make AK-47s, you don't question it. And a lot of factories were converted to do that. You know, actually, there's an AK-47 that was made in the same factory in Yugoslavia that made the Yugo car, you know, that car that everyone makes jokes about how horrible it was. Well, they actually made really good rifles there. But which is,
but did
another,
they equally distribute them? That's,
well,
the
that's
question.
That's another. I have one of them, so I got one, but I paid for it. So there's, you know, that's another example of what's wrong with fascism and communism is, you know, a factory that cannot make a good automobile can suddenly make a great rifle. That means that they're not putting a lot of planning into automobiles for people. They're putting a lot of planning and care into making rifles for the state. But yeah, man, Russia basically pumped these things out forever and gave them with ammo and, you know, instruction booklets by the boatload, literally like pallets of AK-47s to any country around the world that remotely believed in communism or had a population that remotely wanted to rebel and believe in communism. And that's why there's so many of them out there. They distributed the Communist Manifesto and the gun, the rifle to get communism with.
Well, I'm sure that didn't have any unintended consequences.
I think ISIS is one of the unintended consequences. Are they communist? There are communists.
Well, they are. They do want to be a state. So in that sense, yes.
But there isn't there actually some Islamic insurgent movement that is, they say they're communist?
There is. There's a thing called the Little Green Book, which is essentially the Islamic version of the Little Red Book. And Muammar Gaddafi was the like strongest proponent of it. And he sort of talked about a sort of either a pan-Arab or an Islamic socialism, communism. But, you know, he had the short-sighted goal of producing a pan-African gold dinar. And when you reject the dollar, bad things happen to you. So that's not really a thing anymore.
And there is a thing going around on the interwebs virally that says that ISIS is planning to get rid of fiat currency and go with gold, which, you know, there would be historical precedents for. But I don't believe the story because I can't find it anywhere that's not on a blog that has, like, you know, ads for colloidal uranium enema on the enemas on the sidebars. I can't find it.
Yeah.
And really, if it were a true story, I think that at least the American left, like MSNBC, would be covering it because they hate, you know, right-wingers and their gold buggery. So,
For me, it doesn't strike me as unusual because a lot of the sort of anti-dollar hegemony or movements in the Middle East have focused on gold and silver as a currency, as an alternative. I haven't seen any evidence. The closest thing to a reputable, and this is in quotes, organization that has reported on it is a site called Memory. And Memory is an Israeli news agency that translates Arabic news poorly to make Arabs look bad. I'm not sure that's really reputable, but it's at least something other than colloidal uranium.
I think it's a CIA plot to have a reason to question people wanting to own gold in America.
Yeah, maybe.
So what's this got to do with conferences? Let's talk about conferences. So we've been to some. Yeah, tell me about some of the ones you guys have been to that were not libertarian specifically.
Oh, I'm from a festival family. My my dad used to be the guy in the stocks that you throw tomatoes at the Renaissance Fair. And we used to be a frontline camp at Burning Man, meaning we had a camp on the Esplanade. And my dad was one of the artists on the man a few years ago.
Did you ever see a band that played? They don't have a lot of bands there, but they had a band called the Insecto Circus. Did you ever see them play there?
No.
I was in that band in L.A., but I never went to Burning Man with them.
Okay. And then I also used to do pagan conventions and role-playing conventions and board game conventions and fan conventions. And yeah, I've been going to festivals my whole life. And I still go to zombie conventions. That's sort of something I still keep up with. And
I told Jim Jesus he should give you a deck of his Libertarians Against Humanity cards just to sit on your table as a conversation piece.
That'd be worth doing. Hey, you know, at Walker Stalker Con, other than the zombie preparedness pins, the state speech is hate speech was the most popular button on my table. And I mean, I think that bodes well.
I built that.
Yeah, you built that. I think that bodes well for the idea of doing libertarian outreach in non-political zones.
Yeah, I've actually had newly minted libertarians who have no sense of humor, like, argue with me because we sell that pin. They say, like,
that's square. It's because they say there's no such thing as hate speech,
Exactly. You guessed it. They say there's no such thing as hate speech. That's made up by governments. You shouldn't use that term on a libertarian site.
File that one under libertarian navel gazing.
Yeah.
Stop hurting the movement.
You can't hurt the movement because it's individuals. It's not collective. I kind of go back and forth on that. And the thing I keep going back to is there's something in the AA book. And I really like the way AA works as a decentralized organization, the way the political structure of it works. It's kind of, like anybody can create their own splinter cell as long as their primary purpose is helping alcoholics stay sober and they, you know, don't charge money other than passing the hat. There's a few other criteria, but it's a pretty brilliant methodology. You know, the 12 traditions of AA, as opposed to the 12 steps, you know, the things that guide the politics of it. And the creator of it, the co-creator, Bill Wilson, Bill W, in his 1950 something book, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of AA, actually described the political structure of AA as a synergy, a working synergy of anarchy and democracy. And he used that term in the 50s where, like, they were blackballing people using words like anarchy. You know, it was pretty brave for him to use it, and he used it in the correct way. And it really is like voluntary democracy in an anarchic structure, you know, to where, like, it's democracy in the good way, not in the sense of if you don't vote, you can't complain that we steal your money, which is the coercive form. But it's the voluntary form. And it's a really brilliant way to run any organization, even outside of you know, recovery. And I wrote a book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience. The first half of it is about getting bad people out of your life. And the second half of it is about basically, like, what to do once you've got the bad people out of your life, basically running your own businesses. And one of the things I suggest, I have a couple chapters on it, is adopting the 12 traditions of AA to run your own ad hoc organizations for, you know, some specific purpose. And ad hoc organizations always have the problem of mission creep of, like, you know, if they're successful and the people running them are making a little bit of money or having attention or feeling useful and worthwhile, they kind of don't want to give up their throne.
Yeah, I think mission creep is okay. I mean, like, it's part of nature for things, their purpose to shift and change and whatever. Yeah. the problem with mission creep as a concept usually applies to government, and it usually means, like, creeping into places it never should have been.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
but it's totally valid for an organization to try and keep relevant if its existing mission, you know, is accomplished.
I would say that looking at the idea of running organizations with the 12 traditions of AA and looking at my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, might be useful for anybody planning a conference or event too.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You like how I did that?
Yeah. It's kind of like a consensus process or whatever. It's a user's manual. Yeah. It's right there in the name.
Yeah. So Megan, what kind of events have you been to that weren't libertarian specific?
Well, I mostly come from the festival scene, so lots of music festivals. I've worked merch. I've been the merch girl for bands and stuff like that. And yeah, those are my favorite kinds of events. I mean, if it comes down to a kind of single issue that I really, really like, it's music. And so, yeah, I don't go to as many festivals now, but
were they good bands?
Oh, absolutely.
Who?
Yeah, yeah. I like a lot of kind of funk jam band type stuff and jazzy stuff like Modesky Martin and Wood. And
did you do merch for Fish?
No, I didn't. I was a band called Green Hit, actually. And they were kind of like a jazzy experimental kind of group. I like Lettuce, like Derek Trucks, stuff like that. even like Zappa. I one of the best shows I've been to is Zappa Play Zappa.
Except for Zappa. Everything you said, I'm like, I don't know what that is.
They're very successful, like middle range, like festival circuit bands that are like the best music you'll never hear on
the radio.
Is
Zappa on Zappa's Frank's Kids?
Yeah, it's Dweezil and some of the Dweezil musicians from Ahmed. The Mothers.
Dweezil and Ahmed.
It's not Ahmed, but it's Dweezil and like a lot of the original members of the Mothers. So
yeah. I like Zappa. I like Zappa's autobiography too. It's pretty good. I'd recommend it. Oh,
it's amazing. Yeah, I highly recommend it. It pushed me towards becoming an anarchist, I would
say. Yeah, he was almost there, but still in that mindset of like, you have to work within the confines given. Whereas, you know, we don't advocate for anything violent. We just think like working within the system, you know, what does that do? Like 40 years of that have gotten to the point where if you're dying of cancer, you can pay money and get a license to smoke a joint to deal with your chemo pain, you know? Doesn't work, man. Just live your life. We'll be back with the thrilling conclusion and redemption in the third act of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the Bitcoin market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends. So, redemption in the third act. So, David, you had a complaint or a thing you liked about events?
An observation. I don't know if it's a thing I like. It's just an observation. I can't think of, other than the anarchist book fair and an Obama rally, I can't think of a socialist communist festival that I've ever been to.
I've spoken at some and it didn't go well. They don't like me. And, and actually,
I can't imagine why.
if you're talking about anarcho-communist, right?
Yeah. Anarcho-communist. Like, it's funny to me. Like, syndicalist. The only one I've ever heard of is the Anarchist Book Fair, which is a flea market. Like, you're a bunch of communists and you're getting together to sell stuff.
To do communists, to be capitalists. Yeah. That is one of the ironic things. And actually, the American Communist Party, whatever it's called, really don't like Obama because they feel like he doesn't not go not far enough or something.
Think of him as a reactionary, actually. And they actually
notice that he's in bed with big business, unlike most Democrats.
The closest thing to a lefty anarchist event I went to was probably in National Lawyers Guild conference. And it was still a conference, but it was run by like a lot of old school left, like civil rights activists. And in fact, they were doing in honor of civil rights marches and stuff. And they really hated Obama. They thought he was a right wing fascist. And they were like, he's a reactionary. Like,
well, he is compared to a communist. Yeah. No, I
right. Absolutely, these were out communists, basically.
He hasn't committed as much genocide as the leaders that they venerate at their banquets. That's, I think, what it comes down to. I think it was National Lawyers Guild. They had a big old banner behind their speakers, and it said, "Envisioning a world where human rights are not more important than property rights." And I was like, wow, you just went full communist. Like, that's what this organization is about. We're going to attack property rights.
Well, there's when I toured with my film, DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, and I toured with it all over America and all over Europe in 2004, 2005, and had a great time. A lot of the places I ended up showing it were left anarchist events. And this was when I was politically kind of agnostic and just kind of thought, like, leave me alone. Didn't really, you know, hadn't really discovered libertarianism yet. I'd heard of libertarianism. I mean, the Libertarian Party, of all things, tried to recruit me my first day of college. They had a card table in the student union. And I was like, I was high as heck on pot on the pots, and they were like, they could tell, and they were like, oh, do you believe in legalization of marijuana? And they handed me a pamphlet, and I was like, you people remind me of religious people. I don't want this. You know, it seemed like they were pushy about it, and it just seemed like church to me or something. So,
what are some of the events that you like? Okay. Give me, what's a communist festival like?
Well, there's the Lost Film Festival, which they would deny they're communist, but they pretty much are. It's a traveling film festival, which I showed my film in person at a bunch of them. There was the North American Anarchist Gathering in Lawrence, Kansas. I'm searching the word anarchist on the list of places I went. There was the Long Island Revolt Free Space Convergence Anarchist Meeting and Dance Party. And then there's the Portland Anarchist Festival, which is big, and it's every year, and it's at the college. And this year, this is kind of funny, I saw footage from there, and there was some guy on a panel speaking to a packed room. Like, it was like a college classroom. They do it at a college. There was a guy speaking, and like, he had written something that had irked feminists. And there were some of those like, we'll cut ya kind of feminists there. And they were interrupting him and screaming to the point where like, he couldn't get through his talk, or the panel couldn't even happen. And like, one of the anarchists called the police to put it.
Oh,
yeah, weird. Man, it was kind of sad. But that was actually like I tell a story from that one that feminists would hate, but my wife thinks is really funny. And she calls herself a bit of a feminist. You know, I mean, she's kind of her own unconventional kind of feminist. But I saw this kind of curvy young lady wearing nothing but a slip and combat boots down on the ground with a coat hanger trying to steal a Pepsi from a Pepsi machine. And at the time I was like, dude, that's hot. But now I'm like, oh, she was stealing. That's not cool. But yeah, I thought it was pretty neat at the time.
Is it sexist to think that yelling feminists aren't really that much of a threat, though, that really warrants the police?
I don't know,
I mean,
man.
They do this, though. They do this at a lot of colleges. I've kind of looked into this. If there's a speaker they don't like, they shut down the event. They'll pull the fire alarms or disrupt it and scream. Protesting was great and all that. Silly. But just straight up disrupted, shutting down speech.
Well, it's people who scream that they want free speech love to shut down speech a lot of times that they don't like. And but, you know, maybe it is a threat. You know about Valerie Solanas, right? And the Scum Manifesto?
Oh yeah.
And she shot with Andy Warhol. Like she right. And that wasn't even over like a feminist thing. That was over like she'd pitched a movie idea to him. She'd said, you know, go away, I'm busy, and you know, either didn't make her film or made something that she perceived stole her idea, and she shot him. So yeah.
Right, yeah, she was a psycho.
But her book, The Scum Manifesto, was The Society for Cutting Up Men. Well, we gotta wrap it up here. Any final words you guys got?
Don't cut up men.
Don't cut up men. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Unless they're trying to take your stuff and cut up you.
I guess, you know, if you want to advocate changing the world, go out and find people that aren't familiar with your message. You don't necessarily need to congregate around the choir. And so, you know, find something you're interested in that the other libertarians maybe aren't as much, and go seek out those fans and talk to them in their language.
Worms. Thanks a lot, Dobby. Thanks a lot, Megan. It's been a great show.
Worms.
Worms.